This is another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. I'm Skip Stewart, Vice President and Chief Improvement Officer at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Hey everyone, I'm Brad Parsons, Vice President of Market Operations at Baptist.
I'm Gemma Jones, and I'm an improvement coach based in the UK.
Well, folks, we are very fortunate to once again have Jane Adshead Grant, and this is a three-part series. And today is the second part where we're going to be talking about Dare to Care. But Jane, for those that maybe haven't heard about you and your background, would you briefly kind of tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Thank you. And it's wonderful to be back with you. So my background is always in a people-focused role over the last almost 40 years now, based in the UK, but work all over the world. And my background is in executive coaching and leadership development. And what we've been talking about is the framework and a program I've been running called Dare to Care, based on my passion and interest in supporting others with human-centered leadership, and also my passion for listening. Listening in a world, I imagine a world where we listen first, enabling others to step up to and into who they're meant to be. Good to be back.
Thank you, Jane. We're excited to continue. You know, we had a great first session where we talked about culture and communication as part of the C and the CARED model. And it was a great dialogue. You know, we talked about some of the principles that are part of our management system. We talked about trust and empathy. We talked about values and behaviors. It's a great podcast. We hope our listeners will tune into that. Today, as we look forward, we're going to cover the A and the R in the CARED model. And so I think we just want to dive right in. Jane, let's unpack the A in the CARED model.
Wonderful. Well, the first, as this is called CARED squared, this model. So we've got two, it's the acronym, of course, to help us remember these behaviors. And I guess for listeners who may have been with us or for those that may be joining us for the first time, this framework I've called CARED squared is basically an opportunity for us to remember the kind of behaviors that we can give as leaders in our business, in the healthcare, in our practices to demonstrate to people that we care. And I know this is really important and it's a wonderful way that you already offer this through your own models. But this model of mine, CARED squared, the first A stands for ask questions. And that builds on the communication we were talking about in our earlier episode on the listening side. But this I pulled out specifically because asking questions is a skill in itself. And one of the things that I've seen working with leaders over many years is how they have developed this skill. Asking questions that will ignite the mind of others, asking questions that show interest in the individual and helping them to find solutions and tap into their own resourcefulness. So this part of the CARED squared model is asking questions that are mainly open, those that do not require a yes or no answer, those that will go deeper and wider, enabling the mind to open and to liberate the mind rather than simply direct it.
You know, Jane, one of the things that is really great about this podcast is we talk about concepts and then we bring on thought leaders like yourself and hear just a little bit of twist about how you have thought about and arrived at a certain kind of packaging for some of these things. And so one of the things, we're students of humble inquiry, which is a body of knowledge from Dr. Edgar Schein and now his son, Peter Schein. And so we talk a lot about asking questions you don't already know the answer to. And I think it really fits here with your A for asking questions. Are you familiar with Dr. Schein's work?
I am indeed. A wonderful body of work as well.
Yeah. So really love that. And again, I think in your graphic, it says igniting the human mind in another, you know, and I really like that. I mean, engaging, and it really builds off of the communication and the listening that we were talking about yesterday.
It's so true. And what I would love to add to that is as a leader, that the idea of it, asking questions is to open up the heart and the mind of those that we have the privilege of caring for, but also to help them feel valued and dignified as a human being, in the sense that when we're asking questions, rather than jumping to a solution or seeking to fix another, this is what is another way that we demonstrate, I care for you. Your mind matters. What you think matters. And that's the reasoning behind me putting this A, asking questions in the model.
Very good. Very powerful. Chima, what do you think?
What I think is really beautiful about this is you've sort of given us a little checklist to check our questions against, because there's questions and there's questions. You know, there's really good, open, exploratory questions that make people feel good and help them think. And then there's other questions that can kind of shut them down or cause them to get defensive. My least favorite question of all time is why. Like, I teach people not to use the word why. I think it's kind of forbidden or should be forbidden. But yeah, you've kind of given us a little checklist. Is that question, you know, the way I'm going to approach this question and ask this person going to ignite them to think? You know, is it showing that I'm interested, and is it demonstrating that I'm trying to help them, rather than am I trying to get to an answer?
You know, we talked about this some yesterday too, but I think it bears repeating. It sounds easy for us to say that. It really requires lots of practice to get good at asking questions. I catch myself a lot. I don't think I'm very good at asking the right questions. I hear it and know that I should be. But Jane, I'm just curious, in your work, how can we get better at asking questions?
Well, that's wonderful. One of my frameworks for a great question, well, there's two. There's a resource called How to Ask a Better Question, and a more beautiful question, that's written by Warren Berger, and his work is phenomenal, and that I would offer is a fantastic resource. Another is the WAC questions, W-A-Q, Wisdom Accessing Questions. And in fact, I just realized on my website, janeadsaidgrant.com, there is a free download for 50 of the most powerful questions to help us in conversation, or whether it's coaching others. And what makes a really powerful question is, in my experience, is one that's short, succinct, one that we don't know the answer to, one that taps into the thinking of another. So it will start with what most often. And I'm with Gemma on avoiding the why question. What do you want to accomplish? What do you really want? What's been your contribution to this? So the what is a way of asking a very powerful one, and it keeps it open. And so those are some of the guidelines that I would offer that help us realize and know that we're asking a good question.
Yeah, you hit a couple of key things I want to emphasize. So one, there's a resource available on your website. Will you say that one more time for our listeners?
Yes, on the janeadsaidgrant.com, the free download, an online book of 50 most powerful questions.
Very good. I can't wait to get my hands on that. And then you had an acronym, WAC, W A, and then Q.
Q, and that stands for Wisdom Accessing Questions.
Wisdom Accessing Questions. Okay, I like that a lot as well.
Yeah, and they are short and specific in nature. And a lot of them you'll find in my online book.
Very good. So how does asking good questions, what is the link to the other A, to accountability? Because I think that, you know, we're in this space of asking great questions. And then to me, the term accountability is very, very important. And is also a tricky term. Is it a tricky term for you?
Well, it's a great question. And what I witnessed, again, part of this model framework coming together, was observing my own clients and what they were needing and what their team members needed for them as leaders. And so one of the behaviors that came out was their team members were seeking some kind of accountability. And I love the way you've asked me the question. I hadn't thought about it in this way before, Brad. But what's the link between asking questions and accountability? Well, the link is, when we have the privilege of leading somebody, one of the very common meetings we have are our one-to-ones, whether it be weekly or every fortnight. And I offer my clients a very short, easy framework to get the best from those one-to-ones. And funnily enough, it's a framework of questions. What's been working well for you since we last met? What's been challenging for you? And how can I best support you? I mean, if you just have a 15-minute or a 30-minute meeting with those three questions, you're going to get the most out of it. And the team member will feel valued and you'll know what to focus on. But it's that last question, how can I support you, leads to accountability. The first thing is it's helping the individual hold themselves accountable for themselves. And when we have been a leader who's engaged in questioning to help people resource themselves, they are going to feel more accountable for the solution because they've come up with it. And they will feel valued for that. And sometimes they'll also want accountability from others. So how do we hold ourselves accountable as well as other people? And this is another way of building trust in terms of, you know, committing to what I say I will. So that's holding myself accountable. So this is the reason why I kept accountability in this framework, is in service of both others, but also ourselves. What do you think about accountability? I'm fascinated in your thoughts.
Well, yeah, and I want to hear from Jim on this too. But Jane, I thought you did it. That was a beautiful summary of a really healthy view of accountability. I think in some environments, accountability, and we've talked about this on the podcast and some other episodes, but I think accountability can be misused in the wrong kind of environments, and it sometimes carries a very negative connotation. So what I love that you just articulated was accountability to build trust, which I think is very healthy, and then accountability looking at yourself as a leader first. Accountability for what do I need to do as a leader to ensure that I'm supporting my team appropriately. And I love that definition. Gemma, what do you think?
I think so much of this is about the relationship, and that's obvious to say. But like you say, Brad, accountability can be used as a weapon. It can be used as a, you know, as a in a negative way. But what we're talking here about is, you know, telling people in advance. You know, I mean, if you're using those questions, Jane, that you suggested for a one-to-one, and you use those repeatedly, people know what to expect, and they know that you're going to ask, you know, what support they could give, and you know, you've demonstrated that you're going to keep your word. So you're building that accountability through that relationship. So I think it's all about the context, and it's all about the relationship. But if we do something repeatedly and we demonstrate that we are accountable, and that, you know, but also that we're going to hold, you know, I as a leader, I'm going to hold you accountable, but I'm going to do it in a fair and professional way. And I'm here to try and help you support and thrive in your role. Then that's just going to make people, you know, trust us even more and build that relationship even more.
I so appreciate that, Gemma, your perspective and insight in this sense of relationship, because I think, for me, that's what leadership is all about. You know, it's about having two people. Leadership for me is looking at having the leader with the vision and the idea and the inspiration and the capacity to bring others with. And you need the others for it to become leadership in terms of that vision and the people who are on board and saying, yes, I want to join you. And together, let's make that happen. So, and that's what where the relationship comes in. So I really, really love that connection. I think there's one more thing I'd love to say about accountability. When I share this on my Dare to Care program, I help build it out in terms of Daniel Pink's great work on intrinsic motivation. So how do we help others hold themselves accountable? So as a leader, you know, my work is to empower, if you like, to inspire others to hold themselves accountable, because, you know, they're going to accomplish much more if they're able to do that. And Daniel Pink's work on intrinsic motivators is really powerful. And it's looking at those levers. And I'm just thinking here about, first of all, being clear on purpose. So we're able to hold ourselves accountable when we're clear on our purpose, why we're doing what we do, and how does it relate to the organization or the health system's own mission, if you like, and purpose. Another is the systems in terms of, you know, what control do I have around the systems? Are they in any kind of work? Are they in working order and I'm not being frustrated by the system? Another is personal engagement. To what level do I have agency in the way that I work? Another is feedback, in the sense of, am I getting feedback to help me be the best that I can be in the role that I'm asked to perform? Another is capability. You know, do I have the capacity and capability to do the role that I've been asked to do? And finally, measurement. You know, am I clear about the markers for improvement? You'll be familiar with this, Gemma. You know, do I know that I'm on track or where I need to get to make track? I often use the analogy of running a marathon. you know, it's kind of nice to have that, oh, 10K, I'm at the 10K mark, thank goodness, I'm at the 15K, great, you know, I've only got a few more to go, so to speak. So it's, are we clear about being on track? Do we have the indicators in place? And so these are the levers for our intrinsic motivation that I think can really support and underpin this sense of accountability.
That's a great add. Thank you, Jane. That's wonderful. So going to the R in the CARED squared model, the first is recognition.
Recognition and appreciation. And yeah, this for me is one of, alongside listening, the most underused leadership opportunity that doesn't cost anything. It really doesn't. And yet we just don't use it enough. So as a human being, we know, don't we, that we want to be valued and appreciated. And, you know, there's often this debate about having our own sense of self and not needing external validation. And I get that. And I'm all for building internal resilience, internal self-belief, because we have our inherent dignity. At the same time, as leaders, we overlook a huge opportunity when we only recognize somebody for a job well done. If we're only recognizing the output without the effort and everything that's gone into that, we've missed a whole lot. So for me, recognition is about recognizing the individual's contribution through their effort as well as the output. Appreciation, on the other hand, is recognizing the person, the qualities that we see in them. Slightly different. And appreciation is a way of saying you matter because of who you are, not just what you do. So this also is a skill. Recognizing, or rather appreciating, a quality, the goodness that we see each other, seeing it and then saying it. And there is some research by the Gottman Institute in the States, on the west coast of the States, that tells us that when we appreciate somebody on a basis of a ratio of 5 times to 1, they will think more creatively, they will respond with greater confidence, and the relationship between you and them will deepen as a result of having this level of appreciation versus one criticism or critical feedback. So yeah, celebrating others from the whole of the person is what I'm really advocating for here. What are your thoughts on this piece?
Jane, I really love this piece about appreciation. I've got, you know, a tiny little story to tell. There's an organization in Michigan called Zingerman's, who are a group of organizations, a group of companies centered around a deli in the middle of Ann Arbor. And they have a mail order center where they have a warehouse and they send out incredible bread and coffee cake and all kinds of delicious food from around the world. Not an advert. But I was lucky enough to spend some time with them inside the organization. And part of their culture, part of every single meeting that they hold, even if it's a 10, 15 minute meeting, is they end on appreciation. And they ask everybody there if there is somebody they would like to call out and appreciate. And it might be something specific to do with that meeting, or it might just be, you know, that Betty helped me this morning out in the warehouse and, you know, she went, you know, the extra mile and did this thing for me. So it's part of their normal conversation that they appreciate each other vocally in front of everybody at every single meeting. And, you know, when I was there, I think I probably attended 5 or 6 meetings in a day. And every single meeting I heard, you know, 5 or 6 people appreciate people. And I think once you do that and it becomes part of the way you communicate, you know, I saw the reaction that people would have and the pride on their face and the little warm, fuzzy feeling that they felt. But it was very normal. Whereas I've seen, you know, I've been part of other organizations where I couldn't tell you when that has ever happened or when I ever felt publicly appreciated. So I myself have kind of seen the impact of that kind of approach.
Yeah, and we've got several examples at Baptist as well. I think there's cultures that do a great job of this, several entities, hospitals and clinics that do a great job of recognizing folks and shout outs and thank yous. But Jane, one of the things I heard that I really appreciate today is the differentiation between recognition for something done, like an outcome, and the appreciation for a quality or a personal trait that is very kind of intrinsic and very personal to a person. And so I love that differentiation, that we should also be recognizing and appreciating kind of who you are and what unique skill set that you bring to the team, to the problem, to the challenge that we face. And I think that really resonates with team members. So I love that.
I do too, Brad. And, you know, one of the things I appreciate about you is your passion for this work, for leadership, for bringing this body of work, this way of being to those listeners here, but also in the work that you do. And I think one of the things for us as leaders, parents and mentors is it's a skill, like all of these, and all of these are behaviors and skills that can be practiced. And the art of giving appreciation is to be succinct, specific and sincere, because that makes it easier for the recipient as well to receive it.
That's great, Jane. So, and again, we could go on and on with recognition and appreciation. I think that's a really key takeaway, certainly from today, but there's been many. And so let's continue with the other part of R in the CARE Squared model, reviewing performance.
Thank you. So this one is in here because as we navigate our own, you know, role in the contribution we make in the world of work, reviewing performance is often part of many organizations' operating systems, processes. For some organizations, it's an annual process. For those that are even more effective with this, I think they have it sort of ongoing, which is one that I would be really advocating for. And reviewing performance is the opportunity to give feedback. We talked about it in accountability earlier, as giving feedback is part of tapping into our intrinsic motivation. But what I found working with leaders is they don't know how to do it. You know, giving feedback in a way that helps the individual feel valued and grow. And I don't mean here just the kind of that zingy lemon sandwich that you hear about, you know, say something good, something bad, and then something good. No, I'm offering here, you know, a very specific way of reviewing performance, giving feedback that enables somebody to grow. And when I share this, I'm using a framework that actually I learned from working with Barry Waymiller and the Chapman Leadership Institute, which we called SBI, starting from what was the specific behavior. What was the situation? What was the behavior? And what was the impact? SBI. So the situation was, you know, at our meeting this morning, I noticed that you interrupted and you spoke over and other team members. So the specific situation was the meeting. The behavior was talking over others and interrupting. The impact that had is that it quietened the voices of others we would love to have heard. What do you think about that? So we are giving some specific feedback, giving the person the opportunity to comment, and then that helps them. Oh, actually, well, I hadn't realized they did that. Thanks. Or, you know, well, you know, that was my way of communicating. And then as a leader is offering some insight into what would be even better. So as a stretch or as a growth for you, my invitation is to resist the urge to interrupt, for example. But this is what I'm offering, a very simple framework to help people review performance in a way that helps people grow and develop and feel valued in the process.
What's so lovely about that, Jane, is you haven't just launched in with you always interrupt people or speak over people. You know, you've given them this happened. This was your behavior. This was your impact. So you're kind of, it feels to me like it's kind of neutralized from it being a personal attack on someone. You're stating facts. You're stating like this was where we were. This is what happened. And this was the impact. So I really love that way of giving feedback. It feels much kinder, more humane to me almost.
Yeah, and it's real time, Jim. I love that. I mean, it's, you know, it's very practical, and I think it's something that anybody can use. So the situation, the behavior, the impact, I love that, and I think anybody could begin using that today. I think the thing that jumps out to me about this, Jane, is that we, you know, and again, I'll just speak for our culture at Baptist, we all do performance evaluations every year. We do them for the team that report to us. And I guess You know, I think you're right. I think we get into this, and actually we're going into that time of year where it's the time to do it. And then it's a, oh my gosh, hurry up. We got to get all this done. But what you just said is making it more real time. I mean, bringing it forward and being thinking about it all the time instead of just kind of in a monthly one-to-one or an annual thing, but bringing that and making it practical and really using that feedback loop to make it ongoing, which makes it an easier lift for leaders when we actually do have to sit down and do an annual performance eval. Would you speak to that at all, or what's your thoughts?
100%, Brad. And as you were sharing that story with me, it made me think about how you could really enhance the yearly performance conversation. So imagine you've had the reviewing performance ongoingly, and as you said, very time bound at the end of a project or within a certain week or whenever it is relevant for you. That annual performance conversation becomes much more about the development of the human being. Where do you want your career to go? Who do you want to become? Oh, you're up to into leadership. So what opportunities might we create for you in order for you to step into that? It becomes a much more career development enhancing conversation than merely about performance.
Someone taught me once that, and I'm struggling to remember who it was, but that, you know, your annual performance review, if there's anything that surprised to you, like that's a failure of your leader. Like nothing should be a surprise. It should be a very short conversation, primarily forward focused about the next year. And I think that kind of speaks to what you're saying about, like, let's give feedback when it's needed, like in the moment, like let's have a cadence for doing that, but also a way to step in if we need to and not leave it to the end of the year.
And what a great way to show respect for our team by spending the bulk of time really talking about growth and development.
Yeah.
You know, so I really love that.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. I'm so grateful for your, you know, kind of encouragement of this framework. And I'm really can see, I hope for our listeners too, in how you can apply some of these ways of being and these behaviors. As you said, they're not difficult. Nothing that I'm writing is difficult. I think sometimes the challenge is making it more habitual. So just thinking about the idea of reviewing performance more regularly with an individual can be really supportive of their ongoing development as a human being in our places of work.
Jane, well, thank you so much. Like today has been a great dialogue and conversation. We've covered two more parts of the CARED Squared model. Please join us next time for the final piece of that as we wrap it up. So Jane, on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare, thank you so much for joining us again. And we look forward to next time. We'll talk to you soon.
Look forward to it. Thank you.